Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 126 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the second minute podcast that's a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and with me, as always, is my lovely hostess, Erin Paulette. How are you doing, Erin?
It's quiet. Too quiet.
Oh, isn't that true?
I don't know about the rest of y'all, and by the time you're listening to this, it'll have happened one way or the other, but I mean, we're recording this the Monday before the election, and I just get the feeling that the entire country is holding its breath. It's the calm before the storm. It's that moment on the roller coaster right as you reach the top and you have that brief moment of free fall before it goes down. There's just that, that's what I feel right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got a serious case of the grumpies today, among other reasons, but also just the whole, like, I'm just not looking forward to tomorrow at all. I'm not looking forward to going there. I'm not looking forward to possibly waiting in line. Furthermore, because several of the voting precincts are in schools here, they've just given all the students the day off, which means that we got to juggle my daughter as well. And normally I've ever since she was a little ever since she was small, large enough to not be a burden, she's come and voted with me, but I don't want to, like, just drag her to crowded areas. That's just not wise in pandemic land.
I'm actually surprised you are a traditionalist and wait until election day to vote.
Yeah.
that tone of your voice, like, well, yeah, asshole, how else would I do it?
Well, I mentioned in the last weird audio fisk about the fact that I've always kind of been a political junkie. I've always kind of been following politics since, like, something like 13 or 14 years old. A family friend hit me to Rush Limbaugh, and I was not conservative then at all. Like, I didn't agree with Rush Limbaugh, but I absolutely loved the news and talk format. Hence why I'm doing a podcast right now. This is my dream come true. But also just got me following the different characters in politics and all that. It got me excited about voting and elections and things like that. Like the first time I ever voted was just a town election in South Portland, Maine. I just showed up and voted for, like, town councilor. And like, I think there was a referendum question. I can't even remember what it was. And I guarantee I didn't fully understand the questions, 'cause I was, 18-year-old kid. But yeah, so I've always been super into it. And I like the going in and doing the booth thing. And also, I mean, I've got some skepticism on all of the early voting crap and stuff like that. It's probably not founded, but yeah, no, I want to physically take my envelope and put it into the locked box next to the police officer in my voting precinct.
So there are a couple of things coming up in the Florida election that I want to touch on, because I don't know how it is in Massachusetts, but here in Florida, it seems that some people have decided that if they can't get the Florida legislature to vote the way they want, they will try and make it a constitutional amendment and put it up for the popular vote. And I have a problem with this because, well, honestly, it comes down to what a constitutional amendment is. You know, the Constitution is the bedrock of the state, whether it is the nation state or the state. That sounded better in my head, but you get the idea. And it is for a fundamental thing. And when you start adding constitutional amendments involving offshore drilling and gambling and whether or not dogs should be allowed to race and be bet upon, it's like, what are you doing? This is not important enough that it affects our Constitution. And the big thing on here that I really, really like, it's Amendment 4. And it's nicknamed the Are You Sure referendum. And it says, very simply, that all future constitutional amendments have to be voted on twice before they pass. And I really like that because, again, you know, the prohibitionists are trying to do whatever they can to ban guns, whether they be, you know, the evil AR-15 or all semi-automatic weapons. And they didn't get the legislature to vote the way they wanted after Parkland, and they tried really hard to pass a constitutional amendment, and they didn't get the signatures for it. But I think it was Bonn, Ban Assault Weapons Now. And just I've been wise to this sort of thing, and I've been really looking at it, and I like the fact that it's one of these, okay, if you're going to try and do this BS, you've got to do it twice in a row. And I think that is a really good idea. Oh, here's an example, because I'm looking at the summarization of these things. Yeah, supporters of this vote say it would keep the Constitution from being cluttered with special interest items like that mandate of gestation pen sizes for pregnant pigs. That is not a joke. You know, this is the sort of thing that it should not be in a Constitution.
Yeah, it makes me think about things like we have in our nation's history, we have both A, the Volstead Act, which was the 18th Amendment? It was the 18th Amendment, wasn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah, not super important. But again, we had the Volstead Act, which banned the sale of alcohol in the United States, creating what we know as prohibition and all that. And that was a constitutional amendment. Meanwhile, also in this exact same country, we had the federal assault weapons ban, which was just legislation that banned semi-auto rifles and the magazines of guns. And it's one of those things of the Constitution doesn't say anywhere anything about alcohol. Like, there's no statement about the right of people to get rip-roaring drunk shall not be infringed. Though, that'd be an absolutely phenomenal amendment. And we'll put some stuff in for the dope smokers and the tweakers in there too. Let's be big tent. But the fact that we put a constitutional amendment to ban the sale of alcohol nationwide, but then meanwhile we've passed all these goofy laws that ban firearms, which I would argue are clearly unconstitutional. I don't get the rationale behind it.
So the other thing that's of interest in the Florida vote is it's a semantic change, and well, I can't really say I don't know why they do it. I know why they're doing it, but it's interesting. So currently the Florida Constitution says that every citizen can register to vote, and they want to change the semantic wording to say only citizens can vote. And the reason for this is, as I said, semantic. If you say every citizen, all right, so currently the Florida Constitution says that every citizen can register to vote. And they want to change it to only citizens can vote. Now, I look at it and I see the keyword is citizen. And that tells me that non-citizens can't vote. But apparently, some people think it's important enough. And if you change it to only citizens, that will apparently exclude non-citizens. And it's one of those, well, okay, if it's kind of important, I guess. It won't really hurt anything. I understand why they're doing it. I don't really think this will have the change they want it to have. Because I don't understand how people can go, well, every citizen includes non-citizens.
Yeah.
But apparently people think they're closing a loophole. And so, you know, those are the two that are interesting. I mean, there were some other things in there that you won't really be interested in. But I thought those two would tickle your political bone in one way or another.
Yeah, that's interesting. Though I'm also perplexed at the what you're trying to say is Florida cares what their constitution says, because Massachusetts has an amendment that talks about the right of people to keep and bear arms.
Yeah, Florida is a very purple state, very, very purple, and it basically changes with the winds or with the tides. Really, the best way to describe it, we're not exactly like New York or Illinois in that we have one city that dictates the politics of the state. but we have three big cities, Orlando, Miami, and Jacksonville, and they are pretty blue, but for reasons I haven't quite figured out, the rest of the state's redness kind of balances them out. So it really is like a 49-51% a lot of the times, and it's just sort of a 50-50 as to which one it is. I have no idea how Florida is going to turn for the national election. Could turn red, could turn blue. Mm-hmm. It just kind of depends. So, yeah, in that regard, we care about our Constitution. I don't know if that's going to change within the next 5 to 10 years. But currently, it matters.
Yeah, in Massachusetts, we don't care at all. I mean, to just tie in just a real quick, since we talk about queer rights on this show as well, is that Massachusetts was the first state in the union to legalize gay marriage, which I will say before I go on my complaint that I have no problem with, clearly. but
I mean, God, if you had a problem with it, we wouldn't have gotten this far.
Exactly. But this is on the same line of the when people pass medical marijuana. I'm very much a end the drug war type of guy. I think that if you could buy heroin at CVS, it really wouldn't change a whole lot, because I think there are very few people in this country who want X drug and just can't get it because it's illegal. There are people who might want X drug and aren't going to get it because it's illegal, and that's going to dissuade them. They don't want to risk their career and their life by engaging in illegal activities. But I think as a general rule, the people that want this stuff, and so having it be legal and available and in a protected situation where they're not the local drugstore drugstore that actually sells like recreational drugs is not going to like sell to kids and other issues, is not going to sell dirty products, is not going to sell stuff of wildly varied quality and potency. I'm going off on a rant, but overall I'm all for all of that stuff, but I hate the medical marijuana laws because I used to work in the pharmaceutical industry. It may have therapeutical values. It may be great. It's not a medicine. And furthermore, for the people that have their marijuana cards for when it was, we've got recreational now too, but if you've got your medicinal marijuana card, you're not going to your regular PCP. There are literally doctors. That's their job. They come in and they write you a prescription for marijuana, and they, as a general rule, it's my understanding, they're overall pretty hinky. Oh, do you get nervous sometime? Cool, it's for social anxiety. Do you have trouble sleeping? Yeah, you can go to sleep on this. And we'll write you a prescription, and you don't go down to your local CVS where you will pick up your, if you have depression medication or you hurt yourself, you're going to pick up your opiates. You're going to pick up your OxyContins at the CVS, and you're going to get high as hell when you take them. But no, you've got to go down to a dispensary to buy this product. And of course, also furthermore, what do you do with your medicine? You stick it in your mouth and you light it on fire and inhale the smoke. It's the whole premise of it was recreational marijuana with some discussion of the therapeutic values, of which I'm not disputing, but I don't like politics through dishonesty. And that was one of my issues with gay marriage. I appreciated that people could marry who they want in Massachusetts after this was done, but it was settled in a Supreme Court case, which is essentially was saying that John Adams, when he wrote the Constitution and talked about how the state was going to handle marriage, was like, oh yeah, no, that was definitely for two dudes or two ladies or what have you. It's just not true. It was legislating from the bench, and yeah, it just bugs me. So yeah, Massachusetts, we don't care about our Constitution. We make it do what we want it to do. So Aaron, I gotta ask, since this is the we are doing this directly after Halloween, how did Halloween happen in 2020 for you and your family?
So we didn't do anything. Halloween is usually a big thing for me, but So it happened on a Saturday, and I have a recurring weekly geeky get-together on Saturdays with my friends, and so that was more important to me. And my family, they have never really done the whole handing out treats, because the front door is in another room from the TV room, and they just don't want to deal with, you know, the dogs barking and freaking out when the kids ring the doorbell and having to get up out of the chair and go and hand things out. And so what they've done for basically ever since we had enough people in the neighborhood to do trick-or-treating, and it's, I have to applaud how lazy it is. They got a big tub, they filled it with candy, and they put it in a chair, like, in the driveway. And it was basically on the honor system. And sometimes people would take a normal amount, and sometimes we'd come out, and it would be empty. And I can't really blame the kids, you know? And so it's just like, okay, you know, we've put it out. That's what we've got. But this year, they just decided they didn't want to have to deal with it. And so they used COVID as an excuse to turn out the lights and not have to buy $30, $50 worth of candy. And I can't blame them.
Yep.
One thing that I thought was interesting, because I had never seen it before, when we were out walking the dogs, there are two houses across from each other. I mean, this is not unusual, but this is how I need to explain it. And there were a married couple, you know, husband and wife, in each driveway. And they were sitting out there in lawn chairs with the bowl full of candy. And it was like, I have never seen people doing trick-or-treating, you're handing out things from a lawn chair in the driveway. And then I see two of them, and they're basically talking to each other across the road, socially distanced. And it's just, you know, man and woman, man and woman. Interesting. I don't know what's going on. And I really liked it. For some reason, it felt really quaint to me. And I liked that people were out and talking to each other. And I don't know how many people or how many kids actually went trick-or-treating, but they were prepared for it. And there was a pickup truck that had... they were basically doing a hayride, but instead of like a hay wagon, it was one of those utility things that you would like put your riding mower on, things like that. And they were blasting, not blasting, it wasn't obnoxiously loud, but it was very loud, and you could clearly hear it from the inside of the cab. They were doing the whole public safety message from The Purge.
Oh.
You know, it was like, you know, when the buzzer sounds, you know, all crime including murder is legal, blah blah blah. And so, you know, we were walking the dogs right about sunset, and so the timing was just right, and it was like, ooh, that's cool and kind of creepy. I like that. So that was really the only thing I did. So, yeah, I stayed indoors. Because honestly, even if I hadn't done the thing with my friends, I figured COVID was going to screw everything up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just...
I don't blame you on that. If I didn't have the girl, we would have just shut the lights off and just not bothered.
I'm just so over this year, and you know, we've got some to talk about. But before I pivot to that, so what did you do? Did you do anything special?
So the Massachusetts guideline, which was pretty good, was just saying that they wanted candy not in bowls but laid out so that kids aren't digging through stuff and excessive handling and all that. So we just got like a bunch of candy, and actually my wife went and got some like little just cheap little Halloween-y trinkets and just put them in Ziploc bags. So we had little Ziploc bags full of various goodies, and we laid them out on a tray. And along with microwave popcorn, when we first moved into the house, I found like on top of our refrigerator in our apartment, a box of microwave popcorn that was still good, but was getting old. And we just said, yeah, let's throw it in the Halloween bowl that we offer to the kids when they get there. And everyone went nuts about the microwave popcorn. So we've been getting microwave popcorn ever since. It's different enough that they're like, oh, wow, this is something I enjoy and not what I expected. But yeah, so we Yeah, we were just so we set out the goodie bags out in front of our house, and then it made trick or treating with my daughter a whole lot easier, because there's always that house, and it's more than you would think, who clearly forgets that Halloween is going on, and so they leave their porch light on because it's, you know, after dark, and but they don't have candy or they don't do that, so you ring the doorbell and nobody comes, and so and my daughter's just like, is there anybody coming? What's going on? So instead you just walk to all right, is the house lit or dark? Okay, this one's lit. Is there a table out front? Yes. Does it have candy on it? Yes. Okay, go get candy.
One of the coolest things I saw, and I didn't see it in real life, but I saw it on the internet, and I was immediately struck by how clever it was. Yes, Weird, I'm going to explain it to you because I know you're not going to get it. The picture was, it was of a front door, and the front door had little packages of Reese's Pieces taped to it. There were, in fact, 95 of them. And the jack-o'-lantern was carved into the shape of Martin Luther. What do you mean by that, Aaron? I don't understand. I'm happy to explain to you, Weird. So, you are probably aware that at some point, I don't remember the actual date, bad me, but, you know, first it was just the Catholic Church, and then there was a breakaway with the Protestant Reformation. That's why it's called Protestant. They protested. Protest ant. And the Protestant Reformation was jump-started by Martin Luther when he nailed 95 theses to the door of the church in whatever city in Germany he lived in. And that was the equivalent of posting... basically, the door of the church was sort of like the communal bulletin board of the time. So it was his equivalent of like posting to a Facebook group at 95 reasons that he had problems with the way the church was going. And so Martin Luther pumpkin, and instead of 95 theses, it was 95 Reese's.
That's hilarious. Pieces.
Yes. I mean, it took me like 10 times as long to explain as the actual joke is funny, but it's like I saw that and it's like, oh, that's so clever. I really like that.
Oh, that is good. I also saw something similar to what you described. Was there's actually two houses that always seem to be big on Halloween every year. They have lots of decorations and things like that. And this year, they had a fire pit out on their two driveways are touching, so they had a fire pit out in the driveway, and they were all sitting around the fire pit talking while that, and then, you know, probably 8 to 10 feet away from them was a large table, and with a jack-o'-lantern in the middle, and on one side there was one kind of candy and one side there was another side of candy, and they said, yeah, one side's from us, one side's from them, so take one from both. And so that was kind of cool. On the, you got to actually see people, because it's a little gloomy on just the, you're just going from house to house and just grabbing candy without any interaction whatsoever. Sometimes there would actually be people sitting, sitting like up on their porch, away from everything, just so they could see the kids coming. But but sometimes it'd just be, yeah, there was nobody around. Like our house, my wife was just inside watching. She's probably upstairs watching videos and not paying any attention to it. She was happy not to be answering the door. But of course, the best one was there was a house on our street where the house was completely dark, but they had this light with a filter on it, so it looked like flames projecting on things. And the people were sitting out in rocking chairs out on their front lawn in full costumes with masks and all that. And they beckoned my daughter to come and then told her to halt at a certain point. And then up on the second floor of the house, there was a light on and there was a guy in a demon costume banging on the windows and then threw candy into a PVC pipe that pooped it out right at her feet. And it scared the bejesus out of my daughter. And she was just like, as we're leaving, she's like, all right, I got the candy, but I'm never going back to that house. Not even next year. But of course she bumped into one of her classmates while we were out trick or treating. And what did she say to her classmate? All right, you got to come down this street. There's a really scary house.
Yeah, it's really interesting seeing how people are coping, because for a lot of people, they're really dying for that social connection. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's great that they've adapted this holiday where traditionally they don't do a lot of things. They come to the door, but instead they're being proactive. It's like, no, we're being out on the driveway, on the porch. We want to look at the kids. And so that's cool. And that's something that I hope sticks around. But yeah, people like my family just decided this was a good enough reason just to, we don't want to deal with that. And unfortunately, we have in the news for one of our topics, there was a big organization that more or less made that decision. And I regret to inform you, if you haven't heard this, you probably have heard it by now. But SHOT Show, the Shooting, Hunting, and Outdoor Trade Show in Las Vegas, has been canceled for 2021. I'm sure that this is just an absolutely huge surprise to people because January is in flu season. And I mean, I'm not going to get into the whole if COVID is a flu or not, but it's transmitted like it. And, SHOT Show crud has been a thing for quite some time. And honestly, I don't know how people didn't see this coming. I know that when they were talking about it previously in the year, August and September, there was all sorts of, yes, SHOT Show is absolutely going to happen. And I'm going, dude, 2020 isn't done. It's not done with you yet. I mean, maybe in the spring we'll be allowed to have our conventions back. But it's my understanding, weird, that in this case, it was actually SHOT that canceled it, as opposed to them having the hotel cancel out from underneath them. Is that correct?
I actually didn't even read the story fully. I just thought, I mean, I've never been to SHOT, so my hopes aren't crushed for all of that. But let's see. Yep, it does look like that. The National Shooting Sports Foundation was the one to cancel it, just because, literally said, because of COVID-19 uncertainties, which mm-hmm. is a fair statement. I mean, I know a lot of people who have been to SHOT, and specifically this year, I've heard a whole lot of people speculating on supposedly the SHOT Show crud was worse than usual. And there's some people that are speculating, I wonder if we got an early batch of COVID-19. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have heard that as well, because there is a fairly high concentration of Chinese people in Las Vegas. And if I recall correctly, there was some sort of celebration going on at that time. I don't remember if it was, I think Chinese New Year comes later, but there was something going on around that time. And so there were some people who were saying, well, what if COVID actually came to the States in January with SHOT Show? And it's like, well, maybe. I mean, I kind of doubt it, because I think the epidemiologist would have tracked it to there, but it could be.
Yep. But either way, it's a much bigger risk factor. And we're gonna still be in the height of cold and flu season. And again, I've never gotten sick at the NRA annual meeting, but it does seem that just about everybody I know gets horrendously ill at SHOT Show. Like, that's just a con that seems like SHOT Show and the PAX convention seem to be the two ones that the Penny Arcade Exposition seem to be ones where they always talk about horrible con cruds.
Now, I don't get sick at conventions, knock on wood. And it's not because I'm really a germaphobe, but there are two things that I take religiously while I'm there. I chug vitamin C and I take a probiotic. And so far, that has proven me in good stead. So, if you're going to go to a convention, take those. Keep that immune system boosted.
I go with booze. It kills everything.
Yeah, it kills brain cells, but only the weak ones.
says the man that Aaron's right now going through. And the, you know what? I don't remember all the times that we've had Airbnbs together. You've seen me drink. And it's like, yeah, no, I usually actually don't get too loaded at conventions, except when the Geeks, Catches and Guns crew are there and they've brought a gigantic bar with them.
So, speaking of drinks, I think we should raise a vodka martini shaken, not stirred,
mm-hmm.
in the memory of Sean Connery.
Yes, yeah.
I didn't mean to do that, but I'll run with it.
Yeah, run with it. I think he would appreciate that. And yeah, so I'm sure you've all heard now that Sir Sean Connery has passed away at age 90. And a bunch of people are all like, oh, screw 2020. This is just a horrible thing. But it's one of those. He was 90 years old. He was retired. And he died in the Bahamas. And I wonder, actually, they shot Never Say Never Again in the Bahamas. And that was his first film after he had been released from his contract with the Broccoli family for the Eon picture, James Bond's. And he got hired on because Thunderball had been released from Fleming's copyright into a remake of Thunderball called Never Say Never Again. And it was actually the first Bond film I saw in the theater. And I assume that he got paid an outrageous amount of money, because I know that to get him back for Diamonds Are Forever after Lazenby did such a terrible job, that they paid him an outrageous sum of money to get him back for one more picture. And so I got to imagine Sean Connery went from an actor that was doing all right for himself to a megastar. And I wonder if he decided to buy some land in the Bahamas then. That's how I picture it, but I don't know. I don't have confirmation on this. But again, he died in the Bahamas, which are gorgeous, and he was 90 years old, which is an incredible run. And so, you know what? I we're talking about him right now, and we're going to be seeing him for the rest of our lives in various movies, whether we're watching some classic Bond films or The Hunt for Red October, or you're on the ACP film tracks and you're watching The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He's achieved immortality. We are all mortal, but you can make yourself less mortal by leaving an imprint on the world. And Sean Connery absolutely did that.
And also, I believe he died in his sleep. So, you know, dying in your sleep in the Bahamas at age 90, that's a good way to go.
Mm-hmm. So, fair winds and following seas, Sean Connery, you did it. Congratulations. That is a good life that we could all hope for.
All right. So, Weird, you've got something to talk about that I had never heard of before now. And the moment I saw this, I went, oh my God, that's genius. I wish I had thought of it. So tell me about Hold My Guns.
I was about to say you kind of did, just on a different angle. But this, I found this, and this is something that you've heard me talk about in the Fisks a lot. Is this group is called Hold My Guns, and they essentially have created a network. And it's a network of FFLs. When I first read the story, I read the story on guns.com that's linked in the show notes. And I saw, oh, look, they've got, you know, locations listed in New York, and they've got a little interactive map, New York and Massachusetts and all that. And I'm like, I specifically talk about the fact that the Bloomberg background checks make it essentially illegal to have somebody hold your firearms for you. If you are someone who's in crisis and you're like, I'm dealing with some stuff, maybe I shouldn't have my guns around at this exact moment in my life. And, you know, you in free America, if you're in Florida, you could say, hey, friend of mine, you've got a gun safe. You are responsible with firearms. Would you mind just holding on to these for however long it takes for me to get my feet underneath me? But here in Massachusetts, that's a felony. And it turns out what they're doing is they're creating a network of FFLs that will essentially, they do like non-disclosure. They're protecting your privacy. They've got a whole bunch of policies in place that help protect your privacy and help all of that. And because it's an FFL, you are transferring it to a gun shop, which is perfectly legal, and it's being done in the same way where you would put a gun up for a consignment, where you know, you could go to a gun shop and you can just sell them the gun and they'll give you, it's usually something like 10% of the value or something. It's not a ton of money. Or you could say, I'll put it up for consignment and they will sell the gun for whatever they can sell it for and then keep a percentage of the sale price. And so, but at any time you can come in and just say, I want my gun back, and they will give you your gun back because it's your gun. There might be
not quite that simple. Mm-hmm. They do have to run a background check on you just to make sure that for whatever reason you may not have been, well, become a prohibited person, but there was also the whole, just in case there was a medical.
It's an involuntary commitment is what turns you into a prohibited person as well.
Right. So I interrupted you and I'm sorry. But yeah, so you can go and you can ask for it back, but they've got to run the background check. And then what are you going to say?
Yeah. And so then you get, you can get your guns back. And meanwhile, they're safe. They're insured as a general rule. I think always. And as a general rule, the gun shops have better security than your average household would have. So it's a really, really neat system where you can, if you are in crisis, you can find it. And as I said before, you're like, oh, I wish I'd thought of that. And it really reminds me of an Operation Blazing Sword very much, and just the creating a network of independent groups and just having people together and pooling their resources for a really, really great cause. And so I was very impressed at this. It really made me happy to see something about that because, yeah, we're Second Amendment people, but it's one of those, yeah, but it's not all the time. Not everybody should have a gun, and it's usually by choice, and not everybody should have their guns all the time. If you're going through a tough time where you are concerned that that you might commit suicide or do something rash, there's any number of reasons why it might not be the best time for you to, or you're taking somebody in, somebody else is having a tough time and they're a prohibited person or all that, but they're someone you care about. It might be a good idea for you to find a safe place to tuck your guns away so that they don't cause any problems. And even if you're in a state where guns have been severely restricted so that you can't just go, hey, John up the street, you guys, would you mind tucking these in your safe for a couple of months until I'm in a better place, or my friend is in a better place and is not sleeping on my couch anymore. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. That was one of the things I was going to talk about. They don't assume that you're turning them in, that's the wrong phrase, placing them in protective custody, I guess. They don't assume that it's because, you're having psych problems, because there are all sorts of reasons why you would want to have your guns in a secured place. Like you said, you have house guests, you are living with a prohibited person. Other examples are you're going on vacation, or you're military and you're going on deployment for 6 months or more. All of these are very valid reasons why you would want your guns to be in a secure place, and the Hold My Gun locations will do that for you. And there's a fee involved because you're taking up storage space, but you are assured that they are looked after safely and responsibly. And I think that is absolutely amazing. And there's a map of them. I haven't looked in all of the teeny tiny New England states, but it looks like most of the states, there's at least one, perhaps more, locations there to go to a Hold My Gun participant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's links to them in the show notes, and it's just, I was just floored by this when I read about them. They haven't been around that long. They were launched in April of this year. So we haven't been missing out too long, but actually I have reached out to them because I want to see if I can get someone on the show to talk more about it, just because again, this is really, really touching to me. But yeah, there's all sorts of reasons why. Yeah, actually, you reminded me, you're talking about deployment on the Larry Correa, he wrote the Dead Six series with Mike, I believe it's pronounced his name, Capari. But he was, I believe, a contractor, a security contractor at the time of writing that the first book of that. And Larry was actually at an event somewhere, and he was shooting one of Mike's guns and joking about the fact that he was going to shoot his gun and then put it away without cleaning it. Just to get Mike's goose. So it's a very, very common thing that'll happen is the, yes, I'm going on deployment, and maybe you rent an apartment. You're just like, yeah, I'm going to be gone for a long period of time, so I might as well not pay rent for it and just take care of all that. But also just the, if my apartment's going to be empty or my house is going to be empty, don't leave guns in there because in case someone decides to break in. There's all sorts of reasons for this, and this is brilliant. And I want you to check out this this website, but also tell your friends. This is just one of those things of when you're hanging around with a bunch of gun nuts. Let people know about this because you never know when someone might have the need for it. And again, we just discovered this site, and so I think we really do need to get word of mouth because I think this is a great resource to have, and it is not very useful if you don't know about it.
Yeah. Yeah, this is one of the times when I've actually got practical experience here. You know, as someone who has started a grassroots charity, I know how difficult it is to get started. I know how hard it is to get funding. And so these people, they need funding, they need word of mouth. And really, if you have a local gun store that you trust, go there. The website here actually has a trifold brochure you can print out. Just, you know, print it out and hand it to them and let them know what's going on so that, hey, that's an option for them that they can offer to their customers. And just the more people that are making use of this, the more good that is being done. And so, yeah, I absolutely want to support them, especially because, and I thought this was the most remarkable thing, this was born from tragedy, and it was actually something pro-gun came from it. The short version is that a family friend of the founder committed suicide. And I don't know if the family friend was pro-two-way, but I believe so, because, you know, that would make sense as to how this happened. And so this person, instead of doing the, unfortunately, all too predictable, well, my friend, my family, my loved one, you know, killed themselves, and so now I've got to ban all guns. They said, well, hang on a minute. You know, I'm pro-Second Amendment. Most likely the family friend was pro-Second Amendment. Let's find a way to help them without violating their Second Amendment rights. And so that's just so remarkable to me that something good and productive and proactive came from tragedy. And I'm sorry that the tragedy happened, but this is just so anomalous and so wonderful that again, I have to stress, please support this charity in any way you can. All right, so nothing really can top my introduction from 2 weeks ago when I was just so over it. And I started off with, you know, leaving a trail of slime wherever they go. I'm not even going to try. But this is part two of Weirds Fisk of a Colorado gun prohibitionist Zoom meeting. And this one involves Sandy Phillips.
So for my next Fisk, I'm again taking on the Giffords anti-gun lobby web rally in Colorado. Today we're talking about Sandy Phillips, who lost her daughter in the mass shooting in Aurora, Colorado. She and her husband shortly afterwards started working with the Brady Campaign. And the Brady Campaign arranged for a pro bono lawyer to file a suit against Lucky Gunner Ammunition for selling ammunition to the killer. This was the definition of a frivolous lawsuit, and the judge dismissed the case with prejudice and ordered the Phillips family to pay nearly $250,000 for Lucky Gunner's legal expenses. Now, of course, given that the Phillips family were Brady Campaign employees, and the Brady Campaign had arranged for all the expenses of the suit, and since the lawyer never mentioned to them that the lawsuit was horrible and would likely backfire catastrophically, the Brady Campaign agreed to pay the judgment. Just kidding. The Brady Campaign ran away and left the Phillips family holding the bag. A bag they didn't have the means to pay for, and it forced them into bankruptcy. Now, just a second. All of that is true, and the Brady campaign is literally that horrible. But Sandy Phillips isn't exactly an angel here.
I read an article about you, Sandy, and the headline was, "We lost our daughter to a mass shooter and now owe $203,000 to his ammo dealer."
Yes.
Explain that headline.
Well, we sued the manufacturer, not for money, but we sued to have them change their business practices. We wanted them to start providing background checks, or at least, at the very minimum, say, "Give me your ID, prove to me that you are who you say you are, and that this ammo is going to the same address that your billing address." And they didn't want to do that because of PLACA. They don't have to do that. So,
and PLACA, just so we know, is Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms?
Yeah, it sounds like a great law, but it's not. And it actually protects gun manufacturers and ammo dealers and tear gas dealers and all of that. So the judge on the first motion dismissed the case and left us with originally $264,000, but he was kind enough to reduce it to $203,000.
And you had to pay the ammo company.
Well, we haven't, and we won't.
Right.
So let's take her at her word. She sued Lucky Gunner because they didn't require a background check, or at least some identification for ammo sales. But even if Lucky Gunner wanted to comply with this, they don't have access to the NICS database. Nobody but law enforcement and FFL holders do. Attempts to open that database to everyone so that background checks could be conducted anywhere where there's an internet connection have been blocked by the anti-gun Democrats. So I guess Lucky Gunner could require a copy of your ID, but what good would that do? Also, never mind that her daughter's killer bought his gun at gun shops and passed the background checks. So really, her motivations make zero sense, unless we apply malice to it. And notice her laughter about not wanting to pay a court-mandated judgment. So much for respecting the law. So after declaring bankruptcy to avoid the judgment against her, after some creative financial restructuring, Sandy Phillips went to found Survivors Empowered, which is a counseling group for survivors of mass shootings that works closely with anti-gun corporate lobbies like Everytown for Gun Safety, the Brady Campaign, the Coalition to End Gun Violence, and now the Giffords Anti-Gun Lobby.
In 2012, my daughter was killed in the Aurora Theater tragedy. She was shot 6 times with an AR-15. And living through that and trying to cope with that grief made me realize how many other people were feeling the same pain that we were feeling, that didn't have any support, because we really felt like we were in Texas. A lot of other families were from other states, but the people in Colorado had one another. We had no one. So after the trial, we had moved to Colorado for the trial and lived in our little camper.
This is an honorable message. I feel for her loss and praise her desire to help other people who have lost loved ones. Unfortunately, her goals also extend to punishing legal gun owners for the loss of her daughter. Also, note she said they lived in a camper. This is part of that creative financing I mentioned. Shortly before the lawsuit against Lucky Gunner, the Phillips family sold their home and bought an RV. Because the RV was now a primary residence, it couldn't be seized by the bankruptcy court. Not sure where the rest of their money went, but Lucky Gunner didn't see a penny of it. And clearly, she's recording this from a brick-and-mortar house.
And after that, we decided that we would go from state to state to state to reach out to other survivors and grassroots organizations on the ground to get interest in gun laws, number one. And number two, start responding to mass shootings across the country. We have been to 15 mass shootings now. And to let those people know that they have a hand to hold, that we're there for them, and we will see them through their reentry into their new normal, which is not easy to do.
If she's telling the truth, I applaud them. But she's a known liar, so I'm concerned that they are recruiting for the anti-gun effort. And again, at 200 views for this video, they need it.
So we're involved in a lot of ways. We're involved politically, of course. We were there when John Hickenlooper, the governor at the time, signed the bills into law, which was astounding for us, and felt very honored to be among the people there.
She's giving some love to former Governor Hickenlooper because he's on the Zoom call, and he's also running for Senate. But I must remind the listeners that after Hickenlooper signed the background checks bill and the magazine ban, violent crime went up in Colorado. And the people were so upset by this, two state senators were recalled.
We were in the gallery in D.C. After Sandy Hook, and when the universal background checks was voted down, and I believe the numbers were 56 votes yay and 60 no. We were 4 votes short. But in a regular democracy, had we not had the ways of the Senate under Mitch McConnell, we would have won that vote.
We aren't a democracy, and we don't pride ourselves in mob rule. Further, the vote went down because Michael Bloomberg's background checks were deeply unpopular. And a little secret, everybody knows how the vote is going before the vote is called for. So some candidates can vote a certain way to appease their constituents, without needing to answer to those constituents when the terrible law passes. So if they needed a bare majority, I don't think it would have changed the results.
At first, I was stunned and disappointed and frustrated. And then I thought, you know, it was a win if you look at it that way.
Another word for moral victory is defeat.
If you don't like the way the vote goes, you got to change the people that are in the House and the Senate and get the vote you want. So we've been working towards that ever since.
Stated without irony, in Colorado, during an event with John Hickenlooper on the dais, calling for more gun control. I mean, there's tone deaf, and then there's this.
So number one, I think the inaction of Washington has been the biggest frustration for most of the people that we talk to.
Yeah. All the people. The Hearing Protection Act, National Reciprocity, repealing the Hughes Amendment, the Supreme Court enforcing the Heller decision. Yeah, I'm pretty disappointed too.
We know that universal background checks work.
Because when they were passed, Colorado crime went up. See also every other state that did this as well. So the natural solution is to pass it nationally. That sounds wicked smart.
We know that limiting capacity works. It's been proven in Colorado.
Where crime went up. So your proof is what? Mine's in the show notes, because I'm not a liar.
And now we have other concerns as well, such as ghost guns and locking guns up safely in a home so children can't have access. So,
other concerns? Really? You're concerned about ghost guns? As in homemade guns? Newsflash! Humans have been making guns at home since gunpowder was invented. And child access? It's a great idea. If you have kids at home. Pretty stupid when you live alone, or worse yet, when your kids are proficient shooters. And I'm not fear-mongering here, because this is the law of the land in Massachusetts.
We've got a lot to do, but it starts with the lowest hanging fruit, and the lowest hanging fruit is background checks.
Note, it starts with the lowest hanging fruit. As I've said in previous FISCs, depending on how they're worded, Bloomberg-style background checks, in a best-case scenario, will limit all firearms transactions to an FFL. At worst, it makes teaching a friend to shoot, borrowing a gun for hunting, or taking a friend's guns in for safekeeping a felony. Even in the best-case scenario, it's a great fulcrum where a massive amount of leverage can be applied to legal gun owners. During the Clinton years, the ATF refused to renew any FFL that was addressed to a residential zone. Roughly half of all the FFLs in the United States disappeared. Also, there are several major U.S. cities that have no gun shops. Couple these factors with universal background checks, and you have gun owners over a barrel. Add in that when you die, all your guns must venture into a gun shop, and fees being paid, before the guns can go home with their heirs. Even if said heir is your spouse who lives in the same home as you. And all FFL transfers are meticulously documented, meaning that in one generation, we have the National Gun Registry, which could easily be used to drive confiscation. This is the low-hanging fruit.
So once we get that passed, then we can start looking at the other underlying problems and the other underlying solutions that we can get enacted in Washington.
Yep. Once that horrible law is passed and violent crime goes up, they can move on to more onerous laws that will further degrade the quality of life in this country. During the questioning phase, this one was for Sandy.
Sandy, Colorado has made a lot of strides on gun safety, but that's not true everywhere, and some states seem to be moving backwards. Where can I focus my energy to improve circumstances in places that need it most?
That's easy. Vote, number one, and vote for those people who are speaking out on this issue in favor of universal background checks and other bills, and reelect people who have already done the work, like John Hickenlooper in Colorado. He's proven that he is going to be on our side on this issue and do the right thing.
The states that are going backwards are getting safer, as well as have residents that enjoy more freedom. This is their metric for failure. And Hickenlooper left Colorado worse than when he took office. So yes, vote. But vote against whomever these freaks endorse.
We know that the far right has put people in place in school boards. So it starts voting for the people that you know will back good laws on guns in schools to be sure that our schools are safe.
Oh no! Guns in schools! Fun exercise! There are literally hundreds of schools in America where guns are not prohibited. How many of them have had school shootings? If you're racking your brain thinking, you just proved my point. If a school that allowed students or staff to carry guns on campus had a school shooting, it would be all we would ever hear about. Instead, it turns out the schools that ban firearms on campus are the ones that get shot up. And the shooters, when given the chance, let them know that's why they picked the school as their target.
We were lucky enough to be in the room when Governor Hickenlooper signed the bills into law. And there's nothing better than knowing that the work that you've done and the people that you've voted for are really creating safer communities.
No, crime went up in Colorado because these laws don't work. And when the low-hanging fruit doesn't work, they demand more gun control, and we get more crime. And none of it works! We must oppose these anti-gun lobbyists every step of the way because they are dishonest, and frankly, they are ghouls. Those are your anti-gun talking points, and a few rebuttals to combat them.
So, yeah, the Phillips family, I have very complicated feelings about them because on the one hand, all right, they have lost a child. And I understand that when you lose a child and you grieve, you kind of go a little bit nuts. And I understand that. And so I have sympathy. And I completely understand how easy it is to blame the item for something that happens. Look, I'm someone who when I stub my toe on furniture, I curse the furniture. You know, it's fault that I stubbed my toe on it. If it hadn't been there, I would be fine. I understand in the heat of emotion blaming a thing. But I also think, as you said, that what Brady did was just absolutely disgusting. Yes, we will exploit the grief of these people. We will egg them on into a frivolous lawsuit we know won't win. And then when the judgment comes against them, we will abandon them. And honestly, I really think that the Phillips family should be venting their spleen towards Brady, who used them. And that's not an exaggeration. They were literally used, as you said in the Fisk. As soon as the judgment went against them, Brady buggered off. And so now these people had to declare bankruptcy. And it just seems to me that if you have an organization which is as morally bankrupt as that, why are they not going after them? You know, I would think that there would be a case of, well, not only did we lose our daughter, but now we've lost our good name and our money because this organization made promises and then they ran off. And they could have had something.
Well,
I think
I would argue again, this is purely speculative, and I've talked to some other people who have gotten a little bit more, but not a lot more information. And I don't know if they were speaking to me on the record at the time of it. But essentially, before this lawsuit was filed, essentially shortly after the or just before the trial of the killer, they sold their house and they bought an RV, a motorhome, and that became their primary residence. And their money kind of disappeared. And I don't know what they did with it and what was happening, but essentially they haven't been living a life of poverty. And in this case, Sandy was broadcasting from a brick and mortar house. And clearly you can hear somebody doing the damn dishes in the background. Didn't have once to say, you know, hey, I'm in a Zoom call. Can you knock that off for an hour? So I think there's some shenanigans, and there certainly could be evidence that this is exactly what they expected. They were going to sue Lucky Gunner. Lucky Gunner was going to have to pony up a pile of money to defend themselves against this suit. And then when it all went away, they could just walk away and essentially it would cost them nothing. I'm not going to make any direct accusations of financial fraud going through, but there's certainly some things that are very strange happening with that, you know, especially the point of the, okay, I can understand their retirees, they buy a motorhome, but every retiree I know that has a motorhome also has a home. They didn't sell their house to buy it. And so that was one of the things that I mentioned with Lucky Gunner was the, well, what are you guys going to do? And they said, well, I don't think we can do anything. We're going to hope they're going to pay us or somebody's going to step forward and pay on their behalf. But we really can't go after anything because they are living in their only asset is their motorhome, which is their primary residence, which you can't go after. You can't seize somebody's home out from under them due to financial burden. And so, yeah, so I don't know how complicit it was. It's certainly I deeply suspect that they were anti-gun before any of these tragic events happened. That certainly seems to be the case with Parkland. You have people like David Hogg, who I guarantee was anti-gun before any of this happened. And then you've got people like Kyle Kashev, who is also pro-gun. And yeah, he saw his school got shot up and he was like, yeah, the solution isn't to ban guns. The solution is to enforce the laws that we have. And then you get the added effect that she's saying what she said in this on the, oh, we've got to pass these laws because it'll save lives. And she's saying it in Colorado where they passed these laws and the violent crime has steadily gone up. And it's not just in the 2020 COVID times where certain places are seeing a much higher spike in violent crime over this year than they have in previous years. But literally this was in 2013 and every year after that, violent crime and murder has gone up in the state of Colorado. So clearly it didn't do what they promised to say it do, but they're still telling us that it is. So the add in this whole charlatan act of gun control really makes my sympathy for her loss. And again, it's a serious loss. She lost her daughter, but again, there's healthy grief and there's unhealthy grief.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To be our Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibrespodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film track, and the ACP mag dump.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends, both online and off.
You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
So you can find me at pinkpistols.org, blazingsword.org, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com, and hey, bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com. We actually are back. I was going to talk about it, but I forgot. So here it is now. We are unblacklisted, which is not specifically the same as whitelisted. I don't really quite know how, but the short version is that I knew a guy who knew a guy who worked at Facebook. And the guy that he knew was able to unblacklist us, and he has no idea how it happened. So, yeah, the good news is we're back, and I don't know for how long. But the bad news is, unless you know someone who works there, you're not going to get any relief, because I emailed two people and nothing happened. So that's just the way it is. So, you know, if you are a business, a web page that you think is going to maybe be blacklisted by Facebook, if you have a way to get in touch with someone who works there, you cultivate that resource, because that's your only option. So, yay, bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com.
And thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
He's got verbal diarrhea, and I am more restrained with my pearls of wisdom that I grace you with, which is why he talks more and I talk less. Our commentary styles are assorted, and so is our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night.